Number five, please. All right. Gavin versus Wheeler. All right, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Tony Overholt. I am representing the defendant appellant, Officer Lawrence Wheeler. I wish to address two issues this morning. One is whether the district court erred in failing to conduct a proper qualified immunity analysis under Sauthier v. Capps, and secondly, whether or not, under a proper qualified immunity analysis, summary judgment should be granted in favor of defendant Wheeler. The district court did, in fact, err in conducting its qualified immunity analysis.
What's the standard of review here? Because this is a denial of a motion, I believe, is it not?
Standard of review is de novo.
It's abuse of discretion, I would think, isn't it?
As to which question? As to applying the law.
Well, the appeal is taken from the denial of a motion, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay.
To renew a summary judgment motion.
Yes.
Right.
That is correct.
Why wouldn't that be an abuse of discretion?
Why isn't it an abuse of discretion? I was going to ask you.
Because of the issues presented.
And you have some authority to back that up, some case law?
I can file a supplemental brief on that point, but no.
Well, I didn't ask you what you can get. Do you have some here now?
No, I do not.
And do you have any authority from our court or anybody else that denial of a motion for leave to file summary judgment is even an appealable order?
The issue that is raised is the denial of qualified immunity. Under Mitchell versus Forsyth and several other U.S. Supreme Court cases, the denial of qualified immunity is immediately appealable. That makes particular sense here.
And well, was there when that order came down, or judgment came down from the district court, was an appeal filed on the denial?
From which decision?
The denial of qualified immunity.
The initial decision,
right,
of October 4th?
Right.
No, there was not.
Right, and that's where the appeal should have been filed, don't you think? And there's plenty of authority that says you can file that at that juncture. What we have now is a motion to renew it.
There are cases from the U.S. Supreme Court which hold you may take more than one appeal from the denial of qualified immunity. At the time, on October 4th, 2000, obviously Sauthier versus Katz had not been decided.
What are those Supreme Court cases that you're saying say that?
That say you can take more than one appeal?
Right.
I believe Mitchell versus Forsyth may address that. There's another U.S. Supreme Court case, Barons. Unfortunately, I do not have the slide for that. I believe it's...
Doesn't open. Mitchell versus Forsyth say that it is only the, when it turns on an issue of law, is a denial of qualified immunity appealable?
And
that's a fact situation.
When there is a question of law, yes.
And didn't the trial court rest its decision on the factual situation? Of the issue of a material fact.
And the question is, Your Honor, and this is a question of law, were those two findings of fact, the question about whether or not there was a radio communication between defendant Wheeler and another officer, and the question about fingerprints on the gun, were those facts sufficient to create a genuine issue of material fact for trial? The defendant's position is that they are not.
Well, how does the Saucier case change the analysis of that particular analysis? As I understand Saucier, it says you got to look at qualified immunity up front, but it doesn't change the substance of the analysis, does it?
under a series of cases such as Seigert versus Gilley, it's clear that qualified immunity is a two-step analysis. First is the question of whether or not there has been a constitutional violation. The second is whether or not that violation violated clearly established law. Using that framework, and because the district court clearly erred in collapsing the qualified immunity analysis into one step, that being, once it was determined that there was a question about whether or not the Fourth Amendment was violated, that automatically meant no qualified immunity. Because that collapse...
I just said there was a factual dispute, isn't it? I mean, that's what we're concerned with here, is the dispute of facts. You're saying there shouldn't be a dispute of facts?
No.
The judge decided there was a dispute of facts.
I'm just saying,
how has that changed by Saucier?
I'm not saying there's a dispute of fact at all. The district court found...
Well, you're saying there isn't any. I understand that, but that was the question initially decided here by Judge Dillon, wasn't it?
Judge Dillon determined that there was a fact issue about, again, the radio transmission.
His credibility. Your witness's credibility, he said.
But there is no evidence other than Officer Wheeler's testimony about what happened.
That all may be true, but how is that affected by Saucier? That's my question. Why is it a different question after Saucier than it was before Saucier?
Because there had to be a separate analysis conducted under Saucier about the reasonableness of his actions, of Officer Wheeler's actions, in this event. I mean, recall the facts of this case. Judge Dillon specifically found the following. There was a struggle over a gun. He stopped a suspect in the street. He stopped him.
Were there any fingerprints on that gun?
Judge Dillon found that there were not. My understanding is there
were
not.
What did your expert find?
I believe, Your Honor, that there were not fingerprints found.
All right.
I am not certain, but I believe that was correct.
Right. Didn't your expert also find that his testimony at the deposition regarding the entry and exit of those wounds were not consistent with the defendant's own story?
I'd say two things about that. No, I don't believe that's what the expert actually testified. I understand there's an excerpt from the deposition which says that.
Your expert.
There's an excerpt from our witness's deposition. But I believe that excerpt refers to testimony presented by the plaintiff's expert, and that he was referring to the plaintiff's expert's testimony.
It all goes back to Judge Dillon's finding about the lack of credibility, doesn't it?
No, I don't think it does.
Okay, all right. I won't ask anything else.
I'd like to save the rest of my time for tomorrow.
All right.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the court. My name is Nathaniel Lee, and my co-counsel is Karen Seidler, and we represent the estate of Alexis Garvin. I was listening to my opponent's argument, and these type of cases do bear some frustration because their appeal in this case is nothing more than a superficial attempt to delay the jury trial in this case. This is the fourth time they've delayed the jury trial, and the argument he's making is without merit. The Sasse opinion does not change the analysis that was set forth in Tennessee versus Garner at all. Sasse is a case, as you well know, that does not deal with excessive force. In fact, in Sasse, the plaintiff was not even, Mr. Katz wasn't even injured. In this case here, what is critical and what he failed to say is that his own expert says that his client shot and killed someone, and his story is not true. So if you buy his story, he is saying that a police officer would have a right to see a person on the street, shoot and kill him, and there's no consequence. See, in this case here, after they filed an initial motion for summary judgment, unlike the cases that he cited, we uncovered additional evidence that is deadly for the city. So they have no defense, and so they initiated an appeal in which they knew that it had no merit. Now, let's
talk. In your brief, you take the position that the standard of review here is de novo, don't you?
That's a mistake, Your Honor. I saw that it's abuse of discretion standard.
Here you're changing tracks on that.
I apologize. When I saw that, in the overall scheme of things, it is an abuse of discretion standard, but when you get beyond that, essentially, our main argument was that they should have raised this appellate issue some year ago when Judge Dillon made the initial decision. We have a trial date, and they only raised it to delay the trial date that was set for next week. Now, what is critical about this case, what he didn't say, is that the factual evidence in this case would prove that this was a wrongful shooting. The factual evidence would show that the alleged weapon, we're talking about a defendant who is a sophisticated defendant who knows the law. In fact, as part of their policies procedures, these officers know what Tennessee versus Garner say. This incident happened as the decedent was on his way to a store late one night. This burglary alarm that went off, it makes it appear in his brief as though our guy was somehow involved in a crime, when all he was doing was simply going to get cigarettes late one night. The factual evidence would further reveal that when he shot this young man multiple times, this event all took place in less than a minute. There was another police officer right down the street. And the initial impression was that the suspect was going the opposite direction. So from that standpoint, what they're afraid of in the actual trial context is that the forensic evidence, when he said there's no witnesses, the body in this case does tell the tale. We have a dead body with a lot of holes in it. And the police officer claims that he fired all these bullets into his body from a few inches away as he was on top of him. None of the physical evidence supports his verdict at all.
Now, the Saucier case did come down after Judge Dillon's decision, didn't it not?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, now, what should Judge Young have done under those circumstances? Shouldn't he have granted this motion and seen what the argument was, and then applied Saucier, and you know, how he'd come out after Saucier, I guess, is...
Well,
it's not a very clear question, but shouldn't he go on through all of that procedure or not?
Well, it wasn't.
He doesn't tell us in his opinion how he applied Saucier. He just said he didn't think it changed anything. But.
Well, okay, let's assume that he does apply Saucier. Saucier is Mr. Katz was a protester who had some sign that he hit to disrupt the vice president over in, that was over some type of a park. Mr. Stoss at the time was arrested, but he wasn't harmed. There was no harm to him. And this, in part, that was captured on videotape. At the point of the Stoss decision is that it dealt with this gentleman being arrested, but it was not an excessive force case. There's a whole litany of cases dealing with excessive force in this circuit and the Supreme Court, and it doesn't change the analysis that Judge Dillon did.
Well, in the brief order by Judge Young,
I thought it was all perfectly clear.
In the brief order by Judge Young, he doesn't give his reasons why Saucier doesn't apply, but he does say that he's read the case thoroughly and he's going to deny it, so we can certainly infer from that that he didn't think that case was relevant.
Yes, Your Honor, and we don't believe that it is relevant. And this case could rise or fall at the jury trial on whether or not this officer is credible. The physical evidence, the forensic evidence, will all tell a tale that this was cold-blooded murder, and he can't get away with it. Thank you.
Thank you, Counselor.
Judge Coffey and I think that the McNair case ought to make all this perfectly clear.
Have you read that?
Yeah,
I have. Have you, Counsel?
No.
Just read it. McNair versus Coffey, and it's no relative of mine. Mr. Alexander, my law clerk worked very hard on that. Gained a lot of experience in counsel.
In Thoughtfee versus Katz, the Supreme Court said the following. The approach of the Court of Appeals adopted to deny summary judgment any time a material issue of fact remains on the excessive force claim would undermine the goal of qualified immunity to avoid excessive disruption and permit the resolution of many insubstantial claims on summary judgment. That's what Saucier versus Katz says. I understand Judge Dillon's decision that says there are two issues at this in this case which foreclose summary judgment based upon the record presented to him. That decision was wrong.
Under Saucier was responding to a decision of the Ninth Circuit that apparently had a rule similar to the one that we had in this circuit as to reasonableness, being a jury determination, would decide both the question of liability and the question of qualified immunity. But of course, we don't have that situation in this case, I don't believe, do we?
Well, what we have is we have a district court that made a decision that because there was an issue of fact as to two points.
That's a different question, though, isn't it?
No, I don't think so.
Well, there wasn't much doubt about the basic facts in Saucier, wasn't it? I mean, what happened, I think, was pretty much undisputed. The issue is what happened, I think.
No, the defendant accepts Judge Dillon's determination that there were no fingerprints on the gun and that there was a question, that there was a dispute between the two officers about whether he made a radio transmission. The question, however, that this court has asked to decide is a question of law. Is that a material fact which must preclude summary judgment? That is the qualified immunity analysis. That is part of the qualified immunity analysis that defendant Wheeler is entitled to have before this court, something that was deprived to him before the district court because Judge Dillon did not undergo that separate analysis.
Thank you, Mr. Counsel. Thank you, kindly. We will take the case under advisement.